Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided madness. I am your host, Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
Welcome, Sydney.
I hate to even ask.
Yes, go on.
I'm going to. Here we go. What? Why are you talking like that, Justin?
Sydney, I have become vampire. I am now vampire, a child of the night.
You're a vampire now?
I am vampire, please. In the tongue of my people, vampire.
In the tongue of, in vampire language. In what language is that vampires speak?
It's actually vampire language. It's very good. Vampire language, I am vampire. This is true. It's very confusing. Our favorite basketball player is Bill Vlambeer. You're probably wondering. I'm a vampire. I'm a vampire now. Vampire.
Right. So vampires, their language is derived from the Count on Sesame Street? Is that...
That is a racist stereotype. I am a true vampire. A nice guy at the park bit me. And he said I would have life eternal in the dark shadow of the moon of Dracula.
Are you like Blade? Like, because I saw you earlier today.
That was before the
in the light,
before the transformation. Yes, I prefer not to think of those fragile days. Now that I am a child of the night vampire.
Are you gonna bite me?
No, you are safe unless you want my gift of life eternal.
Nah, I'm good.
Do you know some other way of obtaining this eternal obsession?
I do, and I'd be happy to share it with you under one condition. One condition.
Anything, my dear. You must only ask it, and it shall be yours.
Okay, you can't talk like that anymore.
That is the one thing I cannot do.
You have to stop. Legally, you have to stop.
I will make a grave effort for you.
It's a copyright infringement, I think.
It's Halloween now, which is Vampire Hanukkah. And so I will grant this one gift to you, my flesh bride.
Yeah, I think it's a Van Helsing copyright infringement to talk like
this
that.
This is perhaps true. Sydney, tell me about immortality. Apparently, some of you are still going after it. You don't have to give to the vampire child of the night. Maybe you know some other ways that we've tried for.
Well, it's absolutely true, Justin. I think that, you know, it's not quite a medical topic. Maybe it is medical, but it's really the heart of medicine, right? Like we came up with the idea of trying to make people better so that they wouldn't die, really. And so it makes sense that there would be an underlying pursuit to just kind of stop that altogether.
This is medicine's cheat code.
Right. You're just skipping to the end.
Right. You're putting on God mode and you're skipping all the diseases and stuff and just going straight for the obsolescence. I mean, let's call it what it is.
And to be fair, I want to talk about immortality, but you have to kind of talk about like anti-aging science and that kind of thing as well, because I, you know, at the same time as there are many people even today who are still seeking a way to allow humans to live forever, there's also the realization that as of yet, we haven't achieved that goal.
Right. We haven't gotten there yet, which is easily provable.
As far as we know.
Well, right. Or perhaps we did have the answer at one point, and it was lost to the annals of history. Another possibility.
So, wait. We did have the answer, and it was lost, but that would mean that, like, there's somebody walking around who's been alive for, like, a really long time and just didn't tell anybody.
Yes. His name is Ross Perot.
That was your Ross Perot joke?
Perot Eternal.
So that was, I think that was really good, right, for the target demographic that we're aiming for.
Sure.
The Ross Perot jokes are really going to hit home with them.
Yeah, I think that the time is ripe.
Well, the 18 to 25 year olds are all about Ross Perot.
Is that fool still alive?
I don't know.
Yeah. Sue me, Ross Perot. Come for me. Come at me, bro.
You're not old enough to have voted for Ross Perot, right?
No. I was
are
not.
Are you sure?
As far as I know, I have not voted for Ross Perot. I have a shoddy record
from
my younger years. But
I know how you are with third-party candidates.
Sydney, tell me about it. Immortality, I'm ready. The table is set.
So let's talk about, like, from the scientific standpoint, there are sciences of, I don't want to say immortality, but, like, the idea of extending life indefinitely. So for some longer period of time than we already live. There's life extension science, there's anti-aging science. Gerontology or biomedical gerontology or experimental gerontology are really what we're talking about. Gerontology is kind of like the study of aging and all the things that come with aging. And then we're kind of veering into the realm of the unknown with, like, experimental gerontology. You know, the whole idea for this is based on that there is, in a sense, immortality in nature.
Really?
Yeah.
Roll rocks. Rocks?
Honey. Do you think rocks are alive?
Okay. That was a misguided point. Why don't you say the thing you were going to say, and maybe that'll be different than rocks.
I was going to say the immortal jellyfish.
Oh, right. Right.
Did you know that there's an immortal jellyfish?
Is it rock-shaped?
I guess jellyfish kind of look like rocks with legs.
They're like gushy rocks.
Gushy, translucent rocks with legs.
Basically.
Science
for short.
Show.
Scientists say. Scientists agree. Jellyfish are gushy rocks with legs. There's an immortal jellyfish?
Teratopsis nutricula. So I guess one of the, like, immature phases of jellyfish maturity, I don't know, growth, is a polyp stage. And this jellyfish can continually return back to the polyp stage and then become a jellyfish stage over and over and over again. Ostensibly forever. I mean, of course, it's not immune to, like, disease or injury, but it doesn't age, just regenerates forever. There are also some planaria worms that can do this kind of thing, and hydra and bristlecone pines. So you've probably seen a pine tree.
I have.
You're familiar with that these are creatures that, while again susceptible to, I mean, you know, if you cut down that tree, it's not going to live forever, but they don't age. Their cells don't age in the traditional way that we think about it. Think about ours. And on a larger sense, like, bacterial colonies would represent this as well. But then we're getting into multiple organisms, so not quite the same thing.
So how do we start chasing it, Sid?
So as far back as the ancient Greeks, that's where everything starts, right?
They started trying to figure things out. They didn't really get much right, but they at least got the ball rolling.
Yeah, they were thinking a lot. It must have been a pretty awesome place because they had a lot of time to sit and think about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the philosopher Empedocles... came, you know, we already had the idea that we were made of the four humors, right? Blood, phlegm, black bile, yellow bile. You mm-hmm. remember that. We've mentioned that before. Well, he kind of thought that these were based on the four elements, earth, air, fire, water, and that we're all kind of made out of different balances of these four elements. So, like, for instance, examples I found is that a flower has a little more wind and an ox has a little more fire.
Sure, right. That doesn't sound made up, old-timey dudes. Don't worry. Your secret's safe with
you
me.
You can see why you would think an ox has more fire, right?
Right, because he's so is irritable.
Probably.
He hates red.
Hey.
There you go. That's a bull. Yeah. Oh, well.
That's not an ox.
Bulls are oxes. Oxen?
No, I'm pretty sure they're not.
We'll never know.
No, somebody's going to tell us.
Been lost to history.
The aging process was thought to result from an imbalance of these four elements. So the reason you needed to keep them in balance is that there are two opposing forces in the universe. I kind of like this idea. Love and strife.
Hmm.
Keeping your elements, your humors, in balance will keep you closer to the love side and you live longer. The less balance between those four humors, the closer you are to strife, and then you die. You age and you die. Which is interesting because if you think about it, they were kind of hitting on entropy. You know, the idea that things fall apart, everything leads to disorder.
Wow, dudes, you almost got one.
Yeah, well, a lot of the things, you don't give them enough credit. A lot of the things they're saying are kind of right, just for all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
It's like an ends justify the means kind of thing.
That didn't keep me out of traffic court, but I guess we can extend that to the to the ancient Greeks. Why not?
Except for the ox and the fire thing.
That was a little much.
Generally, as we look to like the history of anti-aging and longevity medicine and immortality, from like the 16th to the 18th century, all efforts were made at like preserving life in the older ages as long as possible, right? So like you would get to like your 50s or your 60s or whatever, older even, and then be able to stay there.
Well, I think that's two prong, mainly because you don't believe that you will die until that point. Up until then, you're pretty sure the death thing is going to pass you by entirely.
Well, that's true. I'm never going to die.
Not me neither.
No, I'm going to die.
I'm 32. I've accepted it. You just wait. Give it a couple of years.
You're a vampire now.
I am vampire. That's
which
true.
Sustains me. No.
Longer sustains me.
There yeah, you go. Right. Yeah. So they were valued old age. They thought that your golden years were an enviable period of life. Like that was the time when you were smarter and you'd experienced a lot. And they actually saw like your decrease in sexual desire as a positive thing, because then you could like focus on logic.
You could focus on pretending oxes have fire in them.
You can think a lot more because you don't want to do it.
Sure. Okay.
So they, you know, that was the goal, was how can we get people to get real old and then stay real old for longer?
Preserving our most valuable resource, the olds.
Which is echoed in Luigi Cornaro's book, The Art of Living Long, written in 1550, basically said something that you could probably still apply today, just all things in moderation. If you do that, you could ostensibly live forever, well, at least until 98. That's how long he lived.
It's a good run for that time.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And he actually, he came up with this theory when he was 35 and he was not in good health. He was very ill. And he said, you know what? There's got to be a way to maintain your vital energy. That was kind of the concept, was that you need this energy, this force to make you grow. You know, when you're a kid, like it's the energy that makes you get taller and bigger and age, and that you need to hold on to that. And the longer you can hold on to that and control it, the longer you live. When you lose it, you get old and you die.
Well, that, okay, that makes sense.
Well, it doesn't, but I mean, it has nothing to do with why you die, but he thought it did. And he thought that you could maintain it with diet, exercise, and just don't indulge in things. You know, don't drink too much, don't eat too much, get a decent amount of sleep. And I mean, things that we tell people today. And he lived until he was 98 doing that.
Not bad. Not bad, Ouija.
But again, his focus was, you know, he was happy to be 98. He was happy to be 97 and 96. He had no desire to turn back the clock and feel like he was 35 again.
Yeah, but it was, everything was boring because he didn't do anything fun. Not that there was anything good to eat back then. They didn't have anything. They didn't have super donuts.
I don't know. His name was Luigi. I believe that I read he lived in Italy. If I didn't read that, I'm going to say it's a fair guess.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff to eat there.
I in the 1500s, though? I'm not so sure. I think it was just leaves.
This is not the history of food, but I'm guessing pasta was around.
We'll never know.
Again, somebody's going to tell us. This is in comparison to later efforts against aging in the 19th century and then beyond, where it wasn't enough just to live forever.
They wanted to get young. They wanted to get fit. They wanted to get like Bieber.
Yes. That was the quest for Bieber, is what this age is called.
That's prescient of them, if you think about it.
The Bieber quest era, when it was again.
We keep saying this quest for Bieber. What is that? What does that mean? Why do we keep saying that?
I don't know. I thought you knew.
No, I had no idea. Daryl said we should call it the quest for Bieber, and I said sure. Why not?
That's so weird. I heard it from Steve.
Okay, there's something up.
So, it wasn't enough just to live forever. We wanted to be young forever. And then we started trying to turn back the clock. You know, how can we make ourselves not just still alive, but young? Because this is the same time where we start to link the concept of aging and disease.
Okay. So we see a lot of our treasured old people getting like Alzheimer's, for example. They wouldn't have known that was called, but you know, old people diseases, rotting flesh and that kind of thing.
Right. Well, and I mean, you know, at the time we wouldn't have understood very well cancer, but cancer is certainly a disease we associate more with elderly people. I mean, it can certainly happen to younger people, but we knew enough to know that there's something happening to people as they get older that probably doesn't happen to you when you're 10. And so, you know, whatever makes us get old also makes us get sick, maybe. I know this sounds like really obvious now, but it wasn't at the time. And so the idea that, it wasn't just a loss of energy that was the problem. There are also changes in our body that make us age and then that make disease inevitable. So it's not long, you know, you can't just stay alive forever because the aging process itself is what we've got to fight. Does that make sense?
Right. If you get to, I mean, you're with each year that you manage to stay alive, you're actually increasing your chances that something, I mean, it seems self-evident, but you're increasing your chances that something will kill you.
Exactly. No, and that was not a known concept up to that point. You know, the idea was that there was no difference in your health when you were 98 or when you were, you know, 28. But then we realized we were wrong.
It seems unlikely. I mean, that seems obvious to me. I don't know. I mean, I'm in the 21st century. You know, everything's so easy now. I didn't have to figure this stuff out for myself.
Well, it does. It really, as you read about this, a lot of people have talked about how these efforts echo a changing attitude towards those years of our golden years, towards the elderly and towards becoming the elderly ourselves. There was a long time where it was a mark of your wisdom and your life experience, and you know, to be elderly, people wanted to be around you. They wanted to learn from you. They wanted to know what you knew. And then there was this shift where we suddenly didn't, you know, value our elderly population as much.
Just because we started associating them with disease?
Yeah. Well, a lot of it has to do with that. We thought, okay, when people get older, they can't think as well, and they're not as strong, they can't do as many things, so they're not as useful, and we need to fight that. This was not worldwide, I should say. Yes, efforts to extend life have been, you know, they span the world, but this is a largely Western perspective.
Well, wouldn't it also make sense that we were slower on the uptake just because we didn't have as many a wider range of subjects because people so many people didn't make it to their elderly years, right?
Does well, that make absolutely, sense? Yeah, and it makes sense that part of the evolution of these ideas echoes the extended lifespan of people, you know. People are living longer and longer as we move closer to the current time. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing more of these diseases.
That makes sense.
Yeah. If you look at a time when the, you know, most likely cause of death was infection or trauma, you know, back before antibiotics and safety precautions. And if we look at times of war and exploration, then you wouldn't worry so much about getting old because, heck, if you lived long enough to get old, it was a good thing.
Yeah.
But then as society becomes more industrialized and people begin to, you know, be more civilized, then it changes. So people began to come up with different methods of trying.
What's wrong?
Hold on, honey. I'm getting paged.
Sure, go ahead.
We'll, okay, I gotta take this, okay? I'll be right back.
Yeah, we'll wait.
Brian, my co-host, how would you describe Throwing Shade, the podcast that we do?
Well, Aaron, my co-host, I would say that we take lady issues and gay issues and treat them with much less respect than they deserve, because let's be honest, we really don't have very much respect for each other.
We don't respect anything. I'm not even wearing pants.
No, I'm very ashamed of your body and mine.
Hey, everything okay?
Yeah, it's under control now. One point of fact, I would, you know those plastic spoons that come with like fast food meals?
Mm-hmm.
I'd just stay away from those. Just don't use those. If you get, just throw them away, or better yet, leave them in the bag. Just don't touch them, but just for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
So where were you?
I was going to tell you about the late 19th century French Dr. Charles Edward Brown Secord.
Tell me.
So in order to fight aging and to increase not just your lifespan, but your kind of vitality, to, you know, return to a sense of youth, he advised that we crush animal testicles into some kind of powder or, you know, concoction and inject it into yourself, based on the idea that, you know, as you get old, your sexual desire declines. And so this could reverse it.
How did he study? How did he learn about these things?
He just injected him into himself.
Perfect. Fantastic. Well, I mean,
I do like that spirit.
Sure. I like that. It's a very sort of Bruce Banner, Dr. Jekyll thing. I'm into it.
There was actually a product that came out of this called spermine. I bet you can't guess what's in that.
I'm going to say semen.
That's right. So it was a product made of calf's heart, calf's liver, semen, and then the surfaces of different organs, like I'm guessing animal testicles and stuff that were kept in alcohol, and they would like take cells from that, and then you could inject it and it would return your vigor of youth.
Okay.
So it didn't.
Yeah, well, no, yes. I mean, it's calf semen.
But the
I'm no scientist, Sydney.
It could have been semen from any animal, really.
That's true.
This kind of sparked this whole concept of like the sexual organs and sexual hormones as a way to reinstate youth. And so in 1917, Frank Lidston started transplanting testicles into people, probably animal testicles at the time, including himself. He claimed it fixed his gray hair. So you would take the testicles of a younger person or animal and put them in yourself.
A younger dead person?
I say person because in 1919, L.L. Stanley began transplanting. He worked with a prison population.
Oh, God.
And so when young prisoners would die, he would take out their testicles and plant them in older prisoners.
That's terrible. Not only do you have dead people balls, it's dead criminal balls.
He kind of, as far as I could tell from my reading, he really like wreaked havoc on this prison population. Like they just kind of let him do whatever he wanted.
Doc, I'm not feeling so good. Well, son, have you made peace with all those you did crime against? Yeah, Doc, it's not that. Just ooh, Doc, could you cremate me? Like definitely cremate me for sure. Absolutely, definitely cremate me. You don't look that bad. No, I'm not gonna wait to die. Like, if you could just double make sure and just go ahead and cremate me now, that would be super great. Thanks so much, Doc.
I don't want my balls to end up in old Joe.
I don't want my balls to be in Joe. That doesn't seem so big for my final request.
Now, obviously, all the doctors at the time didn't have access to people that they could experiment on. So there were other doctors who were using like baboon testicles and traveling the country and putting baboon testicles in people.
Boy, I bet they were sure jealous of that guy that had that stash of young balls.
I mentioned
young criminal balls.
It's my favorite indie band.
It's a sweet gig you got there, man.
There was John Brinkley, which we mentioned him in Patent Meds. I don't remember. He made some kind of wacky med, but he also got in on this testicle transplanting debacle. He went to, I thought this was great, to the Eclectic Medical University.
Was it really called that?
Yep. The Eclectic Medical University in Kansas for 3 months.
Seems legit.
3 months. Then he opened a hospital and started doing goat testicle transplants. He made so much money. I mean, that was the thing. People were charging a lot of money for these transplants that he ended up buying a radio station that he could use to, like, challenge traditional medicine and preach his gospel of, well, literally his gospel, because he was also kind of a religious
fanatic. That's completely surprising to me.
In 1930, he was drummed out of practice, so he just moved to Mexico and kept doing the same thing.
Great.
There was also a procedure invented, Dr. Steinach, called vasoligation, where you would take the vas deferens, where all the semen comes out of the penis, and rerouted it back into the body.
Nope. No,
thank you. So that you could keep your vigor.
Now my pancreas is pregnant. I'll listen, I'm no scientist.
That's not how that works. And they did similar things in women, transplanting ovaries from younger women into older women, doing injections of various hormones, and then even radiation.
It is really interesting, isn't it, that and interesting and not surprising, considering sort of what we've learned so far, that the history of hunting for immortality is really the history, at least until the modern era, of men hunting for immortality for men, right?
Absolutely. Well, and a lot of it, I think, predictably, centers around trying to regain your sexual vigor.
Although, you know, to be fair, if my husband had goat balls, I probably wouldn't want to live forever either.
Please tell me you'll never get goat balls.
That's my promise to you, Sydney. It was in our vows, don't you remember?
I don't, but I'm going to watch the tape.
To watch the tape. Review it. Review the tape.
There are a lot of, as we move on through the 1900s, there were a lot of ideas that, a lot of them are just tossed around in theory. Nothing is done to try to explore them. And some of them you've seen probably in sci-fi, like nanotechnology, cryogenics, which really isn't immortality because you're dead when you're cryogenically frozen. It's just that hopefully you will be, you know, when we figure out how to cure death, then we'll bring you back to life. Cybernetics, so Cylons.
Sure.
That's Cylon. Cybernetics Cylon is a study feature. Of Cylons.
Right.
Right. That's definitely true. And then, like, mind to computer uploading. So if you can't keep the body alive, at least we can put your mind in a computer and keep that alive forever.
Yes. Do that with me.
Well, if I figure it out.
If you figure it out, let me know, because I want to be in a computer.
You mainly exist on the internet anyway, right?
I'm basically just a computer already.
And then, of course, the other things that we really don't talk about, but can be echoed in, like, the religious pursuits, like the Philosopher's Stone or the Fountain of Youth.
Oh, okay.
You know.
You don't mean the Harry Potter
Stone. I don't mean the Harry Potter Philosopher's Stone.
All right.
There are certain sects of yogis who seek immortality through different practices, and Rastafarians, and, actually.
Sid, I heard there are other sects of yogis that seek picnic baskets. Is that accurate?
Only when they have boo-boo. The Aghoris of India actually consume human flesh in pursuit of immortality.
I'm not sure it's worth it.
Now they only consume dead human flesh and people who in advance agreed to be consumed, so that's good.
I want to meet that guy. Of all the ways I want my body to be remembered,
I definitely want you to eat it.
Bury me in a nice bechamel.
And then your tummy.
And then your tummy.
Throughout, like, the early 1900s, the 20s and 30s, there was a lot of concern for what are we going to do with our elderly population as people are living longer. And this drove a lot more anti-aging research. Because, the idea was like, well, we can't let people get old because then they can't work anymore and we're not going to be able to support them. And you still hear this, by the way, echoed today, because what is one of our biggest concerns? That all the baby boomers are going to go on Medicare and we're not going to be able to afford it. This is the same thing they were talking about in the 20s and 30s. They actually made up statistics to say that 60% of people who were living in poor houses were elderly. That was never true. Totally made up. But it drove a lot of anti-aging research. We started understanding why aging takes place, why cells have a fixed lifespan, and they die. You know, cells die eventually. They can only divide so many times and they die, and you can't keep them alive eternally. We started coming up with diets and supplements that might fight that. So, I mean, and you still see this today, zinc or selenium or eating right or antioxidants, anything. Herbal things,
we're
anything.
Desperate.
You know, and there are surgeries, you know, cosmetic surgeries, facelifts, Botox. You know, whatever we can do to keep people looking younger and feeling younger longer. In the 1990s, this led to the establishment of the American Academy of Anti-Age Medicine, or A4M, and they say Afarim, I believe, is how they pronounce it. But the idea is that they're going to cure old age. And that's kind of the, there are many people who would argue now that our acceptance that we age and die is wrong and that we should continue to fight it. The most recent efforts in that have been like the have been pushing like human growth hormone as an anti-aging supplement and a way to live forever. There's not good evidence for this. I wouldn't do that. And again, they're using the same tactics as we've said before, that we can't support all these elderly, so we have to fix it.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure that nothing will come of that, but I feel sort of glad that there is a segment of the population that has their minds on this. Even if it's not our best minds, our best and brightest, I'm glad there are some people thinking about it. Because if there's an answer, I mean, I would like to crack it, but...
Well, you're not alone in that perspective, because Aubrey de Grey is a name you may have heard of. He set up the Strategies for Engineered Negligible Senescence, which is now the SENS Research Foundation. It's still working today. Their budget's pretty big. And basically the idea is they think there are 7 causes of aging. They have a proposed plan for each one of them, and they're going to cure aging and then essentially provide immortality. He believes that there is someone alive today who's going to live to be 1,000.
That's crazy.
Well, his ideas, when challenged, eventually the scientific community has said they merit at least looking into.
Okay, well, let's look into that.
So we don't think he's found anything reasonable yet, but we think that he at least merits consideration.
Maybe knows the way to something reasonable.
The only thing I will say is that I looked through his 7 proposed plans, and I'm not going to go through all the different causes of aging because they're very scientific, and a lot of it has to do with just making medications and enzymes.
Thank you for sparing me, dear. I appreciate it.
But one of the 7 treatments that is essential to curing aging is curing cancer.
Okay, a little bit of a hurdle there.
So that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, we've had a few people thinking about that for a while.
Yeah, I think that you could have maybe a whole foundation on that. Maybe there is one, maybe there are many. Maybe look into that, Aubrey. But I think my favorite anti-aging treatment you introduced me to, Justin.
Oh, yeah, my guy.
Alex Chu. It's a gentleman who has found the secret to living forever. Magnetic rings and foot braces are his main products.
He makes them at his house.
And you wear them. And you live forever. He also created Gorgeous Pill.
No, what is Gorgeous? I'm not as familiar with Gorgeous Pill.
It's just a bunch of herbs in a pill that will make you live forever and be gorgeous. And there's also the chi flush.
Chi flush.
There's also the Chi Flush. Again, it's like a packet of herb powder that you just dump in water and drink. But he also, I think this is great, Alex Chu believes that the pinnacle of human excellence is Alicia Silverstone. He wants to make us all as perfect as she is. And that he has also created a new race of superhumans with his products, and he is a prophet.
Alex Chu, ladies and gentlemen, think about Alex.
So wear those immortality rings. Take that gorgeous pill. Don't do those things. But they're out there.
So it's 2013. Do we have anything concrete to go on? Do we know anything about living forever?
No, not about living forever. We definitely live longer than we used to. There are a lot of reasons for that. We've decreased, through modern medicine, we've decreased infant mortality a great deal. And, you know, young people dying of preventable diseases and through antibiotics and ways to manage trauma and accident have changed things a lot. Certainly, we're still looking. There's some kind of compound, resveratrol, which is under investigation that we derive from like hydras or worms or something that lived really long. Mm-hmm. But no proof for that. Right now, I would advise the same things that our friend Luigi back in 1550 was saying, which is a reasonable diet. Exercise regularly. Taking vacation. Try to limit your stress. People love to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess do things like buckle up and wear your sunscreen and, don't do drugs.
And if you're approached by a guy in the park with appear to be sharp teeth, give it a shot. Give it a whirl.
Yeah, if you want to live forever, honestly, the best advice I have is try to figure out how to become a vampire. I think that's just as likely as any of the other methods we have for immortality right now.
Thank you so much to everybody who has been sharing our show, tweeting about the show. It means the world to us. Jameson Brewster, Glad Rags, Mariah, Dave Fletcher, Whitney Josephine, Katie, Angela Golf, Evan Clark, D.A. Cheney, Mia B., Ruth Laverne, Zemantic Dr. Lola Leadfoot, Emily Gaska, Meg, Chopped Up Johnson, Devin Woods, Sarah Rich. This is so much harder to do during Halloween because people make their names spooky. So I say things like Chopped Up Johnson, even though I'm sure that is not that person's name.
We should make our name spooky.
I don't have a good one. Thank you to those of you reviewing the show on iTunes. Gosh, that helps us out a whole bunch.
I read all of them, and I really appreciate it. So please take the time to review us or let us know what you think. Unless you think mean things, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
Make sure to check out some of the other shows on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network. We've got Jordan Jesse Go, Judge John Hodgman, Wham Bam Pow, One Bad Mother,
My Brother and Me,
Risk, so many others. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check them totally out. That's also where you'll find us next Friday for another episode of Sawbones. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.